Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, it's a nice evening out. It's pretty amazing when I can leave the windows and doors wide open. And I don't have to run the heater or anything. You know, it's a pretty good time. So, I'm thinking about subjects to do, of course. And we've been talking about a lot of sort of stressful things in this world, haven't we? And there's obviously the fun exploratory things. And those take a little bit of research from time to time. Going to be plenty of those before the season's over. But I run into the situation several times where people are stressed. And I've got an episode called Calming Your Soul. So if you dig this episode, it's probably going to be a good companion. And so I thought, you know, people don't go back and watch any of the 650 episodes that are out there. And again, that includes a separate channel that's got 101, I think, on the Season 1 Remastered, which is a slightly different channel. Again, I just unlisted a bunch of the videos from Season 1 in this channel. So, you know, they're all blocked anyway because of music, which is just absurd. At least that's the excuse they used. There will be a shift in that they're going to mark every single video that's unlisted that was published before or marked unlisted before 2017, some date in 2017. They're going to mark them private. This is something new that they're doing to lock up a bunch of old content. And they said, oh, if you want it to be unlisted, you're going to have to download it and relist it, you know, re-upload it and mark it unlisted. I don't think I need to do that because we've got everything duplicated out there. But anyway, the website, deepthoughtsradio.com, is your best friend to find interesting episodes that are like ones that you already enjoy. But I think this episode, if I do it right, will be appealing to absolutely every human being on planet Earth. If you're already a relaxed person, there's two things that could happen. One, your comment of how you do what you do in the video down below will be massively helpful to someone else, even though to you it might just be a trivial way of managing your life. You know, how is it that you're presented with a situation that other people are stressing about and you find a way not to stress about it and you don't lose yourself in the process, meaning someone doesn't repo your property or whatever. You know, you're still finding a cool way to get things done. Now, yours truly definitely has, stressful situations, but not all of my stressful situations I would consider to be negative. Some of them I consider to be extremely positive. So we're going to checker this episode with volatile things. And I'm going to try to be as generic as possible without being disinteresting, but I will get specific as well. Maybe offer you some reminders about, hey, you could perceive things like this, because the amount of times I find myself in smoke lounges or personal encounters where someone is super duper stressed and I just talk to them. I find out what's wrong with their life and I give them perspectives on sort of previous experiences they've already had where they mediated this stress in a previous encounter. And sometimes in many cases, way more stressful situations that they just conquered it. And now they're facing a smaller version and they forgot they have these powers. And they think because other external circumstances have changed that they can't use their old techniques. And that's sometimes rarely the case that you can't use an old method on a present problem. But a lot of cases, almost every case that I've found, it's just a perspective. And sometimes just venting things out is all you need to do. And there was an old technique in the, I don't even know when this stopped, but definitely by the, I got this advice probably in the late 80s from a cassette tape program my mom sent me, which just changed my life. It was amazing. I don't even know who this dude was. It was like, I think it was like 16 cassettes or something. Just sort of a life management dude before Tony Robbins existed. But the old technique was to write everything down and then stare at it, and it becomes really tiny. Well, we're digital now, right? I mean, what's crazy is about this world is that I don't even know how many ballpoint pens they don't sell anymore because no one writes anything analog. And analog is, for me, a very spiritual thing. And, you know, there's sort of, It's not that digital technology can't accomplish some of this stuff, but you're being bombarded with the equipment and you're staring into a screen, which has all kinds of potential consciousness issues. Again, gifted children have realized that reading a book, analog, they remember everything. But if they read that book on a Kindle or an iPad or a tablet, the recognition and recall of the story is dismal. And that's because they've been put in a trance looking at a screen flickering anywhere between 60 and 120 hertz, and it just wipes away your brain when you're done. You're recovering from the trauma of the device. So relaxing in the 21st century is such a multidimensional problem as compared to perhaps 50, 60, 70 years ago, where things were fairly one-dimensional, and the primary reason why perhaps we were dealing with stress more so in those more antiquated days was that we were dealing with new issues, and this is something that's going to be an issue with us today. We have new complexities of life, new stresses of life, and this doesn't even have to do with 2020 or any of that stuff. That's a whole separate thing. But there definitely is a factor with being bombarded by doctrine, narratives, things that are just designed to divide and conquer you, to make you hate somebody, love somebody. You find out the person that you love for the reasons that you love them was completely shallow and didn't have a long-term program attached to it, but you're learning. So let's just dive in, shall we? Stress is a really weird thing. The important thing to remember about stress is it's unhealthy for your body. It's unhealthy for every part of your body. It is usually generated by some concept that gets into your brain through whatever means. Either you put it in, society puts it in, media puts it in, a friend, a loved one puts it in you. And it creates this, if it goes through you, you just have a brief moment of like, oh, you know, and it doesn't feel good. But if it truly turns into what we traditionally define as stress, it becomes what we call the feedback loop. It's a concept that has been inserted in your mind that, for whatever reason, it gets re-ingested and re-ingested. It's a problem, quote unquote, you believe, okay, that can't be resolved. You're unable to find a simple solution for things. And I'll give you an example of sort of the thresholds there. If you are a very sort of doer kind of person, you like to solve problems as soon as they come into your life, and that's sort of the vigor of life, the vinegar that makes you love waking up in the morning, perhaps it's part of your job, that's a rewarding, wonderful feeling. It's like when you play the video game where you can't beat the boss and you think it's impossible and someone teaches you the trick or you figure out the trick and the boss fight lasts a couple seconds and you wipe them out every single time. And even if you're the next boss, and you're having the same exact problem, you have faith in yourself. There's some trick up the sleeve of the designers that if you just use the arrow as opposed to the sword, this goes really quickly. But if you don't switch weapons, it's insurmountable. It's impossible to win or near impossible. But once you develop a faith in the formula, and the younger you are, the less of these lessons that you have learned, depending on your case history of your life. But when it doesn't resolve, it echoes inside of us like a ball in one of those screensavers that just bounces around forever. Well, if you're having the issue that you created for yourself, you perceived every part of the problem yourself, and you feel despair, and you feel like you've exhausted all of your low-hanging fruit solutions to things, the thing that we're not really trained to do is to realize that, okay, in some cases, you're dealing with issues like putting your shoes on, tying your shoes, putting gas in a car. There's some cause and effect models that are very straightforward for you. But sometimes you get challenged in a way that you're going to have to get innovative, which is why it's sort of important to never lose that skill, but to also have faith in yourself. Now, the one thing I try to remind my students, and I mentioned it before, is a very important fact about you personally. And there's not a single person that can hear my voice that can argue this point on any degree. You are the product of potentially millions of generations of who we are as a being. But let's just say you go back a few thousand generations, which accounts for pretty much all recorded history as we've been allowed to learn it. All of your ancestors before you made it long enough to create you. All of your ancestors who fought wars, famines, disasters of all kinds, things that they couldn't possibly imagine, they made it through the gauntlet. They made it through the eye of the needle. And you are the absolute evolutionary benefactor of their existence, meaning everything that was a strength is in you, because anyone who couldn't make it died off and most likely didn't make you. And so you are a being of utter and complete perfection. And don't be surprised if you realize that the world is simply trying to teach you that you're not that. It doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what gender you are. The statement I'm making is completely true. And I'll give you a little bit of analogy to further describe to you how amazing you are. This ain't even a pep talk. This is a scientific fact about who you are. Let's say there's a bowling competition in the world. Hopefully all the countries in the world know what that is. In America, you got pins and you roll a ball down there. Okay. If you go to a competition, and the competition is a first-time elimination competition, but there's 5,000 people playing. Now, you're not going to play 5,000 games because everyone's going to play different people. But every time that you're playing, outside of the first game where no one's ever played the game and no one's won anything yet, by the second tier of the game, the second phase of the game, the competition, the elimination process, everyone's playing someone who has won. It's guaranteed that one person is going to win this entire thing. It just is a mathematical certainty. Okay. So the person that wins that competition, depending on how they configure the competition, will have won every single game all the way to the end. Let's say out of 5,000 people, a particular person plays 100 games. They've won 100 games in a row. That's just what happens. You are that person right now on a genetic mental level. Regardless if you're not as smart as your father or your uncle or your aunt or your mom or your grandma or whatever, you still possess in you the DNA that is that champion of champions times however many generations you think that you are related to. So if you need to have faith in your problem-solving capabilities, I've just given you proof that you have it in you. It may be recessed, it may be dormant, it may be asleep. No big deal, you know? It's kind of like you, as a crude analogy, your grandfather or grandmother gave you a kind of a piece of luggage that's got a bunch of weapons in it. And they said, you know, back in my time, we had to use these to survive. You may never have to use these, but I want you to have these things. And you're like, well, that's weird. You know, we're really peaceful right now. We don't have this kind of world war thing going on. But let's just say a war started. Now you open up that container and there it all is. It may not be up to the snuff of what we have against us at that particular point in time, but everything in there can take a life. And sometimes that's all you need to survive, right? In a wartime situation. It's a crude analogy, but what I want to map that too is a metaphor of all the skills you've got in your genetics and your instincts. You have recessive instincts on how to solve everything. Okay, let's go on to the next example here. One of the things that I've had to remind myself at various times in my life, especially when they crash economies and screw up business models that I've put together, or I've invested a lot in a startup and it doesn't work out, I will find myself in a situation where bills are stacking up. What the hell am I going to do? And it's very easy to go to bed at night, especially when you start fading into twilight zone, right? That moment of mind between reality and dream state. You get a lot of weird visions if depending on what kind of person you are, and you can stress out to the point you can't get to sleep. Okay. But what you want to ask yourself is this. Now, there will be exceptions to the rule, and maybe this is where you reserve stress to really affect you. But I will tell you, if you're anything like me, No matter how accomplished you are in life, these weird little repetitive things will get you. You'll lose faith in your ability to do something slash solve a problem that you've already solved thousands of times in your previous experiences. Why? Why do we do that? Well, there's a lot of reasons why. One of them is that you haven't experienced that in a while. You thought you had maybe transgressed past worrying about your bills because when I had my game company, man, it was probably 7 years where I never worried about a bill, man. I could go wherever I wanted in the planet, pay cash for my car, all that kind of stuff. But boy, after the 2008 crash, again, it finally caught up with me in 2013. I went on unemployment, I think for the second time in my entire lifetime. One, you want to always go on unemployment. Let me just tell you, if you're down and out, because if there's a recession going, there's more benefits towards the beginning of a recession and less benefits at the end of a recession. So if you spend your savings first, which is what I've done in both cases, which is stupid of me, by the time I apply, my friends have had 4 rounds of unemployment and I've had one and they're canceling it because they're telling me that the economy is coming back, which it never does the way that they say, but they just don't want to pay any more money because they don't have any. And I'm out of my savings and I've only got 6 months. So it's like super pressure to get something going. But guess what? I've always found something at the end of that road that picked me up that I didn't think existed. Outside opportunities. I just start spreading the word. Boom, something happens. Or I invent a new skill. Or I didn't have skills that were professional. They were just a hobby. And then I pound on them, look at YouTube, experiment, and boom, solutions are there. So just because you haven't dealt with a particular issue for quite some time, well, guess what? Here's the good news. You are smarter today than you were yesterday. It's almost an invariable thing. That's one thing I tell kids about art when they want to become artists. I say, art, and I think music is the same, but art is even easier. If you were ever a good artist in your lifetime and you put it down for 10 years and you think, man, I probably can't draw anymore, test yourself. Oh, it might be a little rusty for the first 10, 20 minutes, maybe the first session or two. But boy, it will, don't be surprised. This has happened to me several times, and I've talked to a lot of fellow artists, even musicians, man. You were okay on the guitar, and you put it down for 10 years, and you pick it up, and you're automatically better than you were. It may just be by a fraction. But geez, to even be just as good as you were when you picked it up, that's pretty awesome. And that's what happens. So if you're dealing with a traditional problem that you've dealt with before successfully, then just realize you're probably more clever today. And, you know, your circumstances change. I understand, you know, when you're young and you're 20 to 25, your daily slash monthly expenses are much different than when you're 45 or 55 or whatever. You got a house, you got a car and all this other kind of stuff. Doesn't mean you don't have to make some serious changes in your life at times, but what's our end goal with kind of being alive in the first place? Well, it's kind of a trick question. It's being alive is the number one thing. To have food in your belly, some place to stay with a shelter over your head. You can still communicate with people. Stuff, well, I think it's no surprise that as you get older, the reason why people, quote unquote, simplify as they get older, mean they get rid of stuff. They stop buying stuff. Is that they found that the entire game was sort of BS. Wasn't that important? Now, what do we call people that don't figure that out? Usually they become some form of hoarder. Either be a minor hoarder where they're functional or they're absolutely dysfunctional and their house is full literally to the ceiling with junk still in the wrapper. They're still addicted to half the process. Not actually using the item, but purchasing it. That euphoria that happens, right? But that's not us, most likely. One of the biggest lessons I learned from Tony Robbins that I want to share with you, and I was just reviewing this with a friend of mine, and she was like, yeah, isn't that crazy? Is the following little experiment you can do. We know that we get into moods. And I will say that I'm pretty stable most of the time. I mean, I'm pretty much the dude on this thing. If I get in any different mood than I am now, it's usually crazy, euphoric, and I'm making jokes and got a group of people or a single individual laughing, and I just keep pouring it in, man, the gasoline to the fire, man. That's where I am. But I can get pissed off. Like I said, you know, my thing is if you screw the team or, you know, step on ahead to get ahead in my circle, I don't have much patience for you, man. But this is about positivity, not negativity. But the experience, or experiment, I should say, that Tony Robbins has you do on his tapes, / CDs, / whatever it is today, MP3s, is that he tells you, and he gets on your case. He's like, he knows that you're just listening to this wherever the hell you are, and he yells at you to do this little experiment. So I will say, depending on who's looking at you right now, this is a really fun one. He says, I want you to make your face frown. Your version of being mopey, negative, you know, just make your face droop and just do it. Just physically do it, even though you may not feel it. Hopefully you don't feel that way, but just really put it on and feel how your chemistry changes in your body. Let it sit for a second. Feel it. Now, stop doing that and do the opposite. Smile. Pretend like you're a little five-year-old looking at the Christmas tree, and it's the perfect Christmas tree you never had. All those toys are in there. Oh, my God, it's perfect. There's still some cookies left for you, too, by the way. And so you do that, and you will feel this amazing, uplifting thing that occurs. It's bizarre. It's a miracle. Now, if you want to get technical about it, I'm not exactly sure, but it is the muscle configuration of your face and your body that is literally Pavlovianly attached to a trigger in your brain that tells you what state of being you're in. There is an old saying, fake it till you make it, right? And what Tony Robbins says, it's much better, it's much easier to pretend that you're happy than to feel yourself into being happy if you're not so happy. So you pretend to not be stressed as opposed to trying to solve the problem systemically inside you to then not be stressed. Because it's just a concept in your brain while you're processing this particular feedback loop in what we would call a stressful way. It makes your body tense, doesn't it? It makes your chest tighten sometimes. Sometimes it can take away your breath, depending if you have a panic attack as a result of it. So let me talk about your body chemistry for 1 second. Because I discovered this one by dating someone who was a competitive sort of bodybuilder in the very, you know, voluptuous, well, I shouldn't say voluptuous, but just the very sculpted, you know, refined female form. She was utterly perfect. So she had no muscle fat on her entire body. Okay. So she would work out at the gym. She's about 5'1". And she would bust out for 2 hours every single day, go on runs for 3 hours on the weekends each day. And so when she's already burned a ton of calories, she looks perfect. So she would reward herself at night before she went to bed, which is about 9:30, which is early for me, and she consumed some sugar. And it's healthy, natural sugar, all that good stuff, but it's still energy. And then she'd go to bed, and sometimes she'd have panic attacks in the middle of the night. She'd wake up next to me, and she'd be just, oh my God. And I put my hand on her chest and I could feel her little heart pounding away like a little two-cycle motor, man. It was thumping in her chest. And so I'd use my voice and I would just talk her down. And oh my God, I could slow her heart down, man. It was great. She'd just roll over and go right back to bed. Boom. But I didn't make the sugar connection until about 8 months into dating this person. Because she started consuming more of the sugar, still looked fantastic, man, and these became more regular. I actually think it technically contributed to the end of our relationship because she was getting black-appled at the same time, meaning she was taking in visions of how things could be. She was synthesizing reality as opposed to just letting what was going on between us, which was great, be the reality. It was unspent energy. Plus, her body was actually so well refined that her conversion of sugar into energy was probably at a maximum. She might be genetically equipped to do that as her race. Okay. So you got to be careful with your energy as well. The other one is the inverse of that. You malnutrition yourself. You eat bad foods. Nothing with energy. Or, you know, like I have to be careful. Well, I'll tell you this much. When I gained 20 pounds, which put me about 185 in about, I think I even got to 190, which for me is just obese, man. It was just a 1 year period. I would sit on my sofa and I'd fall asleep sitting straight up almost. My dad had the same thing when he got really big. He's still kind of big. But anyway, when I felt that, that's all I needed, man. That's all the signal I needed to go, this ain't going to be the same. And I started working out and I got literally in the best shape of my life in the year right after that. And I felt amazing. I felt amazing for two reasons. Looking in the mirror was fun. Now, looking in the mirror is okay for me, but it's like I never went, oh, geez, look at this. Boom, look at my back, look at my arms, look at my chest. Man, it was awesome. So that's a benefit in general. But you may be a little older, and that may not be your problem. You may look in the mirror and go, man, I'm the shape I am, and I'm totally cool with that. And, man, that's all you need. But you got to watch your intake. So make sure your chemistry is balanced. When I teach the students in film, and kind of a side thing of video games, on how to get in the industry and be effective, I always tell them, look, you're going to be hanging out with other gamers and there's a lot of products that are pointed at you kids that you got to be careful with. And what's funny about it is I get classes sometimes. Last couple of years I taught, I haven't had this, but you get a kid who's kind of asleep and the kid's working hard. It's not like he or she is trying to be disrespectful. When I go into the diet thing, man, these kids are awake and writing stuff down. It's really cool. But I said energy drinks are aimed at you kids, big time. All the candy and all this other stuff. What if you go work for a video game company that's got a vending machine that's free? EA's vending machine was free for a long time, and then it was 25 cents. My God, you got a quarter. The drink, you know, your Coke was 25 cents, your candy bar is 25. You got a buck, you're going to get one, you know, two of each. The problem is you're creating this huge surge of energy and then this huge crash. And, you know, when you're young, you can tolerate a lot of that stuff, but even the kids at EA, they ended up increasing the pricing because people were getting obese, people were becoming less productive, and all that's going to lead to a stressful situation if you're not your best and you're not accomplishing your own expectations of any type of solution. But the other thing is how do you solve any problem in a modern day time? You have to use your brain, right? I think that's been the case since the beginning of time. If your brain is being toyed with because things aren't natural, we used to hunt, gather our food, eat, supply ourselves with energy, had to share it with the tribe, and you weren't going back for seconds very often. They might, you know, knock off a limb if you did that. So sitting there binge eating, it's not about judging you for any of your body shapes, man. Not at all. Some of the heaviest people I know are some of the most monstrously healthy people underneath because they eat right, but they're still large. It's just what it is, right? No big deal. I want to get that out of the way because it's part of your chemistry. It's part of your foundation of who you are. Now, we know people are wound up. Some people are just tight. Everybody's different. But I will tell you, one of the fundamental archetypes I find in family members of mine who you would say most definitely are like super anal retentive people. Again, this is no judgment of their character, okay? This is just calling a spade a spade. You must be able to keep things real. I had to teach my daughter that was like, hey, if I make an observation about someone that points out perhaps a flaw, I'm not judging them and saying they're a bad person. I'm just saying we as a group of people need to be able to say that this is occurring. And if nothing else, try to learn something from them so that we can manage our lives better. But sometimes people are tight. It could be they have parents that were really similar to them and it loaded them up in their formative years. How do you handle just existing in your home? Like I said in a couple episodes back, I got friends of mine who are extremely neat freaks. And I think it might have derived from parents that were very disciplinary. What you want to do is keep those beautiful patterns of being neat, but lose all the stress and the sort of the PTSD of a parent perhaps yelling at you for not being perfectly clean. I dated one person at a time. One person at a time. Yes, I only date one person at a time. I dated a person that did something wrong at the house. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the punishment from the mother It was very neat. A very sweet woman, to be honest. But she was young at one point and had five kids, so five. She forbid her daughter from bathing for a week to teach her some sort of lesson. And it wasn't anything to do with being clean, because this person's super duper clean. And so she ended up showering every day, but she had to go down the street and go shower at her friend's house and then walk to school. And I suspect the mother knew that that's what was going to happen. She just wanted to make a big point there, and the point was well taken. A little extreme for my parenting advice, but whatever. But that caused a cascade of obedience from that point forward. It also, it depends on how you react to it, right? Sometimes it could be, well, screw you, you're insane, and I'm no longer going to listen to you anymore. I'm going to keep doing what's right for me, and I'm going to be clean, I'm going to bathe, but I'm not doing this little thing you're talking about. You can get angry all you want. That's me, right? Just keep it fair, keep it clean. Now, you can also be raised by folks that are complete inverse, folks that are very loosey-goosey, doesn't matter, hey, do whatever, the house is a wreck, and then you're trying to figure out how to keep a partner in life because it wasn't really clean. I have a friend from my hometown. Her father was known as a, I don't even know if he was known for this, but when he passed away in his house, they went in to clean up the house because they have to do that, right? And it turns out the man was a massive hoarder. Beer bottles and Marlboro cigarette cart containers in gigantic piles. This dude had somehow, nobody knows how this happened, but he allowed a giant hole to form in his front room of his house, literally right down to the dirt. I don't know how you do that. I mean, you spill stuff and spill stuff and spill stuff and never clean it up. I don't even know. Maybe it was the bottles were all there and they rotted through the floorboards. We don't know. But it was a mess. They not only cleaned up the house, but they demolished the home because it was total. Well, big surprise, this person has struggled with hygiene her whole life. But she's a girl. And, you know, I think most men don't want to come over a woman's house and find it just unkept to a really chronic degree. Okay, so that happens too. We have to have sympathy and empathy for all situations, right? Again, this isn't a judgment. This is like, oh, you could probably use some help. Well, I'll do it in front of you. You're going to help me. It's your place. But just remember how we did it. Remember how it felt good afterwards. But don't be surprised if someone loses the sensory mechanisms in their brain to recognize positive versus negative. It was never there in the first place. I'm telling you these things because these are the foundational mechanisms that sometimes lead to upper level things that cause feedback loops to occur, at least in my experience. But let me ask you, have you ever been around someone that's got a really nice voice? No matter how chaotic things get, and I might do well on this show as I have a focused hour and a half, but I definitely can get energized to ask anybody who's ever met me where I talk about things. So I'm not the perfect example or anything, but you get around a person that's got a nice voice and they just always have a decent cadence. And no matter how severe things are, they have a very gentle way of mentioning it, strategizing against it, fixing it, or getting you through the storm. And you just feel better. Nothing's really changed necessarily, but they detach you from your problem. They put that feedback loop way outside your body, sort of your mind's eye. And all of a sudden, it looks much smaller. And you also start seeing solutions that you didn't see before because you were too close to the problem. It was inside you, bouncing around. Well, one of the self-awareness stages that, sadly, some people miss their entire lives, others figure it out at a later time and kind of regret, oh my gosh, man, if I had figured out how to be this cool about things, or, you know, just not panic, man, my 20s would have been way better. My teens would have been way better. Okay, can't repair the past, right? But what you can do is make a change today, right? So I mentioned, and I just reconnected with this dude. It's so much fun. I even told him this to his face, and he just barely can believe it because he's so humble. But I've mentioned a long time ago, this dude who's one of my dad's best friends in the entire world. And he's just a cool cat, man. No matter what he's doing, he had this voice just from the heavens, man. I mean, he still does. He's like leather, dude. But he also was gifted with that voice, but he was also gifted with the way to use that voice. Just like an old ancient soul visiting Earth. I don't know how you explain it, man. I remember I knew him in his 20s because I was a little kid, and he was always cool, man. But he was dealing with life just like everybody else. Wasn't a fairy turning, you know, his skateboard into a chariot for him. I mean, it was just, he was just cool. And so I made a conscious decision, although I didn't, you know, I mean, there's no way to go up to somebody. How come you're cool? How's that work? He doesn't even perceive himself that way. But I did. And there's a few other people I've mentioned in the show that were like that. This one of my best buddies, Randy Martinez, who passed away when he was 19. He was the version that was just a couple years older than me. He was a big inspiration to me because I watched him in school. And he had everything. He could have been super arrogant, but he wasn't. He was chill. He was humble. Didn't have to be. I mean, especially in high school where you just lose your mind when you start succeeding. Not this cat, man. He was cool as a cucumber, man. And so try to find someone if you feel like you might be a little uptight, a little wound up just genetically. Try to find someone that you can emulate. Could even be a fictional character. Doesn't really matter. Real ones are probably more powerful. But remember how we talked about the facial expression that overwhelms your sense of chemistry. If any of you did that during the recording of this show, or the playback, I should say, you will have experienced, I can almost guarantee 100% of you experienced that shift in your overall attitude towards your moment. Well, guess what? You figure out a way to be the coolest version of yourself. Experiment with it, man. Make it fun. Don't tell a soul what you're doing. This is between you and yourself. And you will find that you've got a beatnik in you somehow, man. You're just like, what's up, cat? You know,
what's up, daddy-o?
That will lay a beautiful foundation for you to deal with anything that's stressing you out. The nice thing about that whole experiment, and you may already be that way, I mean, to be honest. And again, if I'm just confirming things that you've done correct in your life, then here's your present. I'm saying you're 100% right. Not that my opinion is everything. But when you slow down, what ends up occurring? You still have the processor going in your mind as quickly as your processor works. It's just you're slowing down your sort of knee-jerk reactions to solving problems. You're not going, well, let's try this. Now, that's typically my first phase of life, no matter what I believe. I will approach a problem, especially in like software, like 3D software. I'll be like, well, let's just try to bang on a few settings to see if we can get through this. And if we can't, we got to take a deep breath, a good glass of water, and I got to watch some tutorials. Don't want to do that, but I'm going to do it. And some will be bad, some will be good. But in the end, I'm like, oh, that's how you do it. Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, it makes complete sense. And guess what? That problem goes away for the rest of my life. Wow. Now, if I'm in a job interview or I'm in front of somebody who's trying to test out my skills, well, okay, try to do this. You're like, oh, yeah, watch this. Boom, 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 boom. Done. Pow. Super fast. Why? Because I've done it 100 times since I learned how to do it. Now, the other one is, okay, just to get it out of the way, is that if something in the world soothes you, music, some sort of, again, like brain.fm is playing these beautiful tones to you, and it just sort of occupies all that static in your brain, you'll find out that that stuff will short-circuit the energy that's being given to this feedback loop. It just basically says you don't have enough energy to think about this crazy stuff. What are you doing right now? Well, that's what we're going to focus on. Mm-hmm. You also might think of things that you have done that typically are responsible for your maximum apex of relaxing in your past. One of the simple things, but you may or may not be able to completely engage this, would be to get away from work for just a little while or get away from whatever's stressing you out. Could be an afternoon in the sun. Could be going to your favorite lake, beach, location, park, and you just chill. And you know what? You might think, well, what I'll do is I'll go to those places and I'll try to solve the problem while I'm at these beautiful places. And in the end, you shouldn't try to do that, most likely. I mean, if you're really in the mood, do it. But the game is usually let yourself have a little bit of a break from everything in life. And you'll find out as you're walking back to your car, walking back to your bicycle, walking back to your house, life's pretty good. Life's pretty good. I'm alive, man. You know, even if you have something plaguing your body, well, you know, we deal with that every day. It's just getting old. It's just what happened. I got an injury back. Well, that's just what it is. My battle wound. I get to tell a story no one else tells. So the first part of the equation is you. Let's recap what we just said. You are an amazing human being. It's like you're born with a degree that no one can take away from you. So don't ever let anyone take it away from you. But most of all, don't take it away from yourself. You don't deserve that. You're amazing, period. And don't worry about, you know, especially superficial crap. Like, you know, one of the things that just bothers me is when someone says that they're ugly. I'm just going to put this out there. It's more of a metaphorical statement than a literal statement, but just in case. We are here because thousands of generations of people thought we were sexy as hell. I guarantee you, we look like one of our relatives. Guarantee it. Even though we're a mix of a bunch of different people, you probably have a predominant gene in you that looks like the best part of your father, the best part of your mother, and you're sexy as hell. Just because society arbitrarily picks a geometry configuration that says this is pretty, and you don't have that particular configuration, you need to step back from that problem and say, so what? There's a whole tribe of people that think what I am is something else, man. Now, there may be exceptions where, again, we've doubled, tripled, quadrupled our size and no one in your family's got that configuration. There's still probably someone out there who loves that to death, so don't even worry about it, right? But yeah, you can make improvements. You can change yourself. Again, like, there's a part of me that gets freaked out that Michael Jackson did all the plastic surgery that he did, but at the same time, there's stages of his evolution prior to his nose falling apart where I think it was like, yeah, you do look cool as hell, man. Even though I would have had no problem with you staying, you know, your genetic default, he made himself look pretty damn cool with some of those surgeries, I will say. I wouldn't do it personally, nor would I probably tell him it's a great idea until after he proves me wrong. So, whatever. But the self, that's the first one, man. And honestly, yourself is just coming from no brothers and sisters, being sort of, I'm kind of a 50-50 extroverted, introverted configuration of a human being. I'm a Virgo, so just do your math. You know, when you're born is a big decider in how you form as a human being, because it will determine your level of age, your formative age, when you're either in winter, spring, or summer, fall. So I was born in August, so by the time I am getting any cognitive motor skills, summer's here. So as I'm waking up, it's a beautiful day in Frankfurt, you know. And I'm sure that affected who I was. Someone who's born in summer and gets their cognitive capabilities in winter, and say they're in an area where there's a lot of snow, you're being forced inside while you're forming, which might make you more introverted. So just be aware of some of the mechanics that might have affected you. But now let's talk about dealing with external factors, because this is where we have to relinquish part of our control. You can change yourself overnight. You can change yourself in 5 minutes just by simply making a decision, a split second. And I'll remind you, it's not those gigantic decisions that you make, which you rarely make in life. It's all those millions and millions of little teeny tiny decisions you make that absolutely dictate who you become as a human being. And I will say that any habit that you build is going to greatly influence who you are as a human being. It's going to form addiction patterns. That's why Tony Robbins, I don't know what that guy's worth, $100 million, billion dollars, who knows? The reason why that guy was so successful is he built a technology to help you, again, like I've said recently, map true negativity to your addictions that are ruining your life and positivity to the addictions that you don't have yet that will make your life wonderful. And what he teaches you, and this works, man, is that once you finally map the right thing to the right thing, it's all on autopilot. The self repairs automatically. You know, there's a lot of people that used to eat a lot of sweets. And then eventually, like me, my palate switched where eating sweets, I feel like my mouth is coated with a toxin. It's really strange. You know, and sugar is an inflammatory, which ruins all your organs, and contributes to your energy levels. If you don't spend the energy, you're going to have panic attacks. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things about sugar. Doesn't mean you oversalt and get high blood pressure, but you know what I'm saying? You got to, moderation is everything. But once we deal with outside factors, well, what could those be? Well, rarely outside factors are non-human, but it does happen. We're going to push that to the end. When you're dealing with other human beings, there's a bunch of things that we don't get taught about that as youthful children. And I don't know that it was ever taught, quite frankly. I don't know. The further you go back in United States history, even the 50s and before, there was a lot of sort of unspoken knowledge. You had to see things happen before you understood wisdom. Your parents didn't necessarily teach you anything. You just had to witness it. And communities were smaller, so they gave you more interaction with humanity than a big city where you never see the same person twice and you don't know any case history with anyone's decision-making process. Once you see someone, you know, get addicted to drugs and it destroys their life, well, then that's going to be in your mind the second that you're presented with those drugs to make a decision as to whether or not you're going to add this to your habits. But if society has built a culture that renews every 10 years and they have new drugs and new things to be addicted to, well, let's put it this way. Would you let anyone tell you who the heroes are in your life? Would you let anyone else tell you who the villains are in your life? The answer should be emphatically no. You must use your own judgment of character, your own standards and morals that you have developed over time to judge whether or not someone is a beneficial person to society, aka you, or a villain. So you have to police everything that's taken into you, not only the chemistry, but the mental apparitions that are called narratives. Very important. Once you start taking control of that, oh man, relaxation is just right around the corner, if not instantaneous. Rejecting a lot of things that were brought into your system while you were still being played like the pinball machine, instead of playing your own life like a video game where you're in control of where the ball goes, right? But what is one of the most unifying factors about all humanity? We just did the episode on the Wisdom of Eden. Well, even Adam and Eve weren't made perfect. You can take that metaphorically, or you can take that literally, depending on your faith. We all know that's true. But what is imperfectness equal when we talk about interacting with other human beings? Well, I think that means that they're not always going to do what you think they're going to do. They may not do everything that they thought they were going to do. And if you've wrestled with any of your own little demons, you know that's true about you. Okay. So let's just average that whole thing out to this mean, this average frequency of man's ability to accomplish what man sets out to do. One of the things that happens, I think, when you get older, and this is starting to happen to me, and I think it's just hilarious. I kind of see my life as observing myself from afar, like a third-person video game. But I have noticed now where things that would rile me up instantaneously when I was younger in my 20s, and I had to say something to somebody or something like that, which wasn't a lot, but there was enough that I was just, you know, gagging on my own performance when I look back, is that today I'm more capable of empathetically dialing into someone else's state of mind. It's not accurate, probably, but it's accurate enough that I see someone having a really bad day and ruining other people's days. You know, I see someone comes into the room and they're just, they've had a bad day and they need to vent and they're just acidic, man. Everything they say is just, ooh, Debbie Downer times Debbie Downer. It makes me in this time frame of my life calm down and go, okay, this person needs somebody to listen, to maybe give them feedback, but they may not want any feedback. They may just need to vent. I'm there, man, if I can be there. And it's sort of nice to pay it forward. You've been blessed for that particular day and that particular moment where you're not feeling the same way, but they are. They're feeling this crazy hysteria. But now there's friends, I have a whole episode on friends, which is very important for you to assess what is actually a friend versus an acquaintance. There's such a powerful, powerful upgrade for your consciousness if you can make those distinctions and stop saying that everybody is your friend who you don't even know. With social media, how many hundreds of people are on our friends list that we're interested in what they're producing in this world? We like seeing their feed on social media, but we're probably never going to meet them. Even if we knew each other and chatted with each other, they're so far apart that we won't be able to physically get together. And with the world today, you know, who knows, right? Probably even worse odds. And there's a sick thing going on that that there are forces that don't want us to meet each other, because the more they can quarantine us away from each other through conquer and divide tactics, the less we share information and find out that, one, we're very similar, we don't want to hurt each other, because they can't create wars between us if we know that we don't dislike each other. So if they keep Russia completely cut off from the United States and they can say anything about Russians, and people might believe it. It's sad, but the internet's kind of conquering that. It's nice. Those compilation meme videos are helping, trust me. But let's say we transcend friendship and we get what's known as a relationship. Oh boy. Well, hopefully in most cases, everything is wonderful. But even in the best of circumstances, you're going to have a disagreement about something, and it will probably catch you off guard, which is where the problems can arise. Hopefully they're temporary. Hopefully you have a patience pool on that particular day to deal with it. But typically, what happens in our life is that we have a lack of patience on that particular day. It has nothing to do with our partner, but they also have a lack of patience on that exact moment, on that exact day. And because you potentially live together and spend every day together to a certain extent of hours, you are going to put together the perfect storm. Now, of course, what I'm about to say is a little idealistic in achieving perfect behavior, because perfect behavior doesn't have to be technically perfect. It just means you didn't react. Now, I just did a video on reacting, and that has to do with the speed of which you react to data that's coming in. And this has a lot to do with the self, but this has a hell of a lot more impact when dealing with others, depending on any level of configuration, friendship, acquaintance, or relationship person. What I have discovered is that sitting down with somebody else at the early part of your relationship, when you're idealistic, when you're in infatuation stages, when you might be simping a little, is that you should say, and this is what I say, I mean, I should be careful in telling you what to do. Please erase that in your brain. I tell them right away, look, here's the situation. I love you very much. That's why we're in this situation, right? I assume you feel very similar to me, if not more than me. It happens. So if we run into an issue in the future where I am rubbing you wrong, I seem like I don't care about something that is very important to you, please understand this is a pure moment of ignorance on my part, and bring it to my attention. You can even say, hey, this is one of those things you talked about way at the beginning of the relationship. And that puts me in a state of objective observation way more than the normal subjective reaction. And they tell you what it is. You know, you did that thing and you said this thing, and I just got this. That saying doesn't work for me, man. You know, my dad used to say that. My old boyfriend used to say that. My ex-husband used to say that. Whatever it is, it triggers them in a way that, man, I don't need to say anything of a particular way. I'm a man of many words. I can reconfigure what I'm saying, or I can avoid it altogether because it's not that important. And it diffuses the situation. And I've had this be extremely powerful in my relationships. And what's interesting is like, I've had, probably the last three relationships I had, I only had an argument with one of them, but we broke up with all three. All three of them broke up with me, okay? And so, you know, there's alcoholism applied to two of them and religion applied to the other. But what it was in the end, in fact, again, I've said this a couple times, but this is a person who was smart enough to say it to me first. And to this day, we're still friends. She's with another guy. She's totally happy, and I'm totally happy for her. She said to me at the beginning of the relationship, she goes, look, if I suddenly get bored of you, don't take it personal. My friends and family tell me that's what I do. I don't see it necessarily, but I think this is what happens. And she'd been married for 10 years before she met me. And sure enough, that's exactly what took place. There was some alcoholism involved too, where I didn't drink as much as she did, and she thought that was a huge factor. It's sort of like, don't remind me that I drink a lot by not drinking a lot like me. You know, whatever. But I respect this person. I don't even know if she drinks that much anymore. So when we had to break up, it was definitely, you know, a disappointment. But man, we stayed friends. We ate dinner within a month and stayed, we probably ate three or four times after that. It was sort of this, I pay for it this time, she pays for it the next time. It was just a fun little thing we had. And so there are ways to premeditate solutions into an exchange with another person. But what about that old saying, it takes two to tango? Now, that could be applied to obviously a ton of things, positive things and negative things. Well, you don't need to worry about the positive things. Let those things happen, right? Now, there are people out there, just to preface this, there are people out there that have made a career out of getting into relationships and taking advantage of the other person because they actually have a nefarious little thing. The amount of women I've dated who have had previous boyfriends that, you know, the second they started dating, the guy moves in with them and then stops working and makes a bunch of excuses why she has to pay all of his bills. I've seen that a little too much in my lifetime. It's mind-blowing because I've never met a guy who's ever done that, who at least ever admitted doing that. Usually the dudes I hang out with were like all American, normal people. I mean, I put your country in that title and you just go earn the money. You go do what you do. So save those very exceptional situations where that might be occurring. And this has happened to buddies of mine where women who were previously married, these are folks that were in their 60s and early 70s and did have everything paid for them. They really just wanted to continue that lifestyle, but never communicated that with my buddy. And he ended up kind of going broke as a result of falling in love with these people because he tried to do it. But he's getting older and jobs are drying up, you know. Let's say we're not in a toxic situation like that. It's just normality. You got to get along with another person. Well, if you can tell yourself right from the very get-go, today, as of this episode, if you haven't already told yourself this, now, this little saying is something you got to remind yourself of as often as you can, which is that people are human, like Adam and Eve. They're flawed. They're going to eat the apple every once in a while when they're not supposed to. And that could be a million different things. So instead of waiting for them to make a mistake, which might kick off today's fad of trying to extort things out of your mate, meaning they offended you or they pissed you off, which is really what offending means, and now you're going to get the free back rub, good dinner, sex, whatever it is, don't get into that manipulation, because that is a little seed that grows. And this is something that if you're aware of that particular scenario and you're about to get into a brand new relationship and you have that little conversation at the beginning of the relationship, let me tell you, laying down that law really fast is super important. Meaning, look, here's the deal I'm going to make with you. If you offend me, I just want to talk to you about it, because obviously I'm pissed. On some level, I'm disappointed. And all I want to do is just get that resolved. Let's figure out how to, you know, compromise or whatever we need to do to make sure this doesn't happen again. And I want you to do the same thing with me. But the one thing we're not going to do that I won't do for you and I can't handle if you do this to me, it's just a policy that I decided to adopt in my life. Let's not punish each other for making a mistake. And let's not try to reward each other after we realize we're the jerk. Now, of course, there's probably exceptions to this rule. I mean, if you go sleeping around on your wife, I don't know, Kobe Bryant bought the big diamond, you know, that kind of thing. You still got to be careful. But hopefully you're not making those egregious mistakes in a relationship. So, you know, they will say that takes two to tango. Well, that argument takes two to tango. So if you can slow down your reaction time. And, you know, it's funny. I watch videos online of at the smoke lounge. We watch all these compilation videos And I will say that one of the things I have seen online that just shocks me in a beautiful way is people having tremendous patience for other people. Both relationships, where one of the fads that's online, it's been online for 10, 15 years, is these couples that prank each other, right? And the ones that habitually create fake pranks and fake channels, we're not talking about them. We're talking about a husband-wife situation where she learned about a trick or he learned about a trick, and they pull a prank. And you see that spouse just look at the other spouse going, "Boy, you never behave like this. What's wrong, honey?" You know, I mean, they really try to mend the situation, but they're in the middle of a prank. Really beautiful when I see that. The other big one I see, which is very encouraging, and of course we see plenty of the opposite behavior, is someone in public having a problem, either legitimately in a video, an old lady trying to cross the road, and some young kid you would think would just ignore the elderly, immediately stops and helps someone across the street. There's even younger people that have dressed in old suits and pranked people. And man, the people just come to the rescue, man. You know, not all society sucks. In fact, I think 99.9% of us are wonderful, beautiful people. Doesn't mean we can't get all kind of irritated at each other, right? I think the other thing that I want to mention about this before we close out relationships and just the generalities and little mechanisms that can help is that my grandparents both finished their lives together. One of my grandfathers died when he was like 60, so he got cut short. But he also smoked 3 packs a day and had a heart condition. So, which I do not have, just so you listeners know, in case I get McAfee'd. They had a perception of their relationship which was very powerful. And again, I don't know of any situation where my grandparents, I think both of them were virgins when they commenced their relationship together. And so they had a perception, though, that no matter what happened, they got through it. Now, society has taught humanity some of the worst behaviors humanity has manifested over thousands of years, right? Cheating on someone is not new. Doing something bad to someone, it's all been done a billion times before the modern age. But if we're going to truly accept the trophy of being a civilized culture anywhere in the world, these are things, unless they're built into your society, if you have a polygamous sort of society, that's fine. That's what you do. There was just a mechanism, like when there's a problem in a relationship today, what Hollywood teaches you and television teaches you, same thing, is in magazines and everything else, is that is your basis for leaving the relationship, for canning the whole thing. Don't ever try anymore. Get into this state where you should immediately cut off the relationship, go to social media, milk everybody, / extort feelings and behaviors out of others to get attention, attention, attention. Some people are so addicted to this, they will never get in a full-time relationship. Why? Because their addiction to social media gets impaired. No one cares about the hot chick who's got a husband, who's a good guy. They want the hot chick that you're saying there's a chance, right? And so that can become a disease in a person. And males have the same thing, man. So just as a generality, to avoid this kind of negativity in your life between you and another person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with potentially, these are great subjects to bring up and talk about at length at dinners, communions that you have with this potential partner, right? You talk about it ahead of time such that that behavior has already been externalized in the relationship, such as like, hey, you can't pull this little trick. Or if you got this problem with social media, I'm aware of this problem. So if I ever see you behaving like that, just understand, I don't think this is a good thing. I think this is a bad thing. And you're slipping back into those old ways. And so a lot of people will, because there's a beautiful thing that happens. I want to say this. A lot of us, okay, we've all done this. When you do embark on a new relationship, a new job, a transition, you're moving from point A to point B, and meaning everyone who knew about all your issues in point A, they don't exist anymore in your life. You're over here in point B. You kill your old social media account, you make a brand new one, cut everybody off, right? You can rebirth yourself in the eyes of someone new. And what's happened for me is that when I have like a period where I'm by myself or not in a committed relationship, I build up habits that only work for a dude that's all by himself. And then when I'm with someone, what I interpret it as is this is a euphoric moment. Okay. Got hair on my face at some point. It's a euphoric moment for me to ditch all those bad habits and start anew. I'm rebirthed. And believe me, it's just like a near-death experience where you're glad to be alive. You get to throw away all those old habits. Now, if you have a really cool spouse, you have little sort of like, for the lack of a better term, perhaps an auditing session within the relationship. And you go, you know what? We made it this far. High five. Boom. Now, is there anything that I could do better? You know, I'm asking. And if you already made a list of things that you'd like to change, then say that across the table. You know, there's this thing, you know, the thing I do that kind of ticks you off. I'm sorry, I didn't see it as clearly as you see it, being not me. And so I am electing to get rid of that. And just so you know, it's going to flicker in and out, right? I'm going to still do a little bit because it's still an old habit. But if you just have patience with me, or if you see me doing it and I don't want to do that anymore. One of my big ones was I grew up with a dad that was very creative with his judgment of other people driving a car. So he was an excellent driver, excellent driving teacher. The dude is really just amazing. I mean, his education, old story, when he was teaching me how to drive when I was 14, he's teaching me every defensive driving technique. And we're in a little tiny town with a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit, okay? But he said, one of the things you want to do is look underneath the cars as you're driving up a street. If sunlight is coming underneath the car, but there's a little tiny shadow, a little two-bar shadow, that means that someone else is standing on the other side of that car. So be careful. Someone might walk out in front of you. And no sooner did he tell me that statement. I'm driving, and there's a little S-curve in our hometown where one street transitions to another. It's all continuous. Here comes a ball. Boing, 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 and a little boy ran right out in front of my car. And I'm at full 30 miles an hour, and I slammed on those brakes because I saw his little legs. It was just the most bizarre moment in time. But because he was such a good driver and is such a good driver, I took with me to California that same habit of being super acidic at times in a car. And what was interesting was I dated plenty of people, probably for, Jesus, 15 years, that never said anything to me about it. They kind of went along with it because you try to be funny at the same time. You're doing like, oh, that guy, oh, my gosh, that's crazy, right? But finally, I dated someone long term, and they were like, you know what? I really can't stand the way you talk in the car. I understand that these people are driving horrible, but guess what? Everybody drives differently. We're in a big city, so you can't be sitting there holding up a blue ribbon qualification to everybody driving in front of you. You got old people, you got young people, you got people who probably had a really bad day. You just need to chillax, dude. I knew she was right, but I knew that that habit was so embedded in my system. We're talking about years to fix. And so it probably took me, I don't know, I think probably multiple years to finally acknowledge to her that I heard her, that I understood her, and that I was going to change my habits. And I finally nailed it to a huge degree. Even when I'm by myself now, I really try to understand other people's issues. And there's that beautiful saying of like, you don't know what kind of day another person's had. So relax, man. But here's the beautiful thing. This episode's about relaxing, right? Okay. When I conquered that issue for her, I didn't realize it, but I also conquered it for me. She upgraded me by simply just observing and mentioning it to me. But I was thick-headed, right? It took a little while. Now, I want to mention these scenarios to you so you understand. No one is going to expect you to be perfect. And if they do, well, they must be pretty amazing themselves, right? But communication goes a long way, friends. It's important to say words and to say, okay, I hear you. It's going to take a while to fix this one. Please help me out. And the thing is, you got to understand. You got to get them to understand. Look, when you slip, you're going to slip big sometimes and you're going to slip small sometimes. So when the small ones happen, Everyone has the understanding that's not going to be hard to tolerate. But if you slip big, you can actually turn it into a joke in the car. I've done it. I just rile off some huge thing. And I'd stop and look, and I'd be like, oh, I did it. Oh, my God. And then the laugh comes from the other side. Yep, yep, that's you, man. You know. And so the more I screwed up in the big manner, it made me want to double down and triple down and never doing that. Because finally, this magical thing happened. I saw myself outside of myself. And I was like, Jesus, that guy's an asshole. I don't want to be that person. But the benefit was, when I conquered it, I got more relaxation in my life. And today, when I drive to my taco stand every day, 5 days a week, I should say, they're off on Mondays and Tuesdays. My taco place is closed on Taco Tuesday, of all places, right? Of all days. I just look at where I live, and I'm happy to be here. I feel very fortunate. And that changes everything. So now let's talk about sort of the last big one, which is, because this is a thing where, let's say that you're married and you technically wake up together in the morning, you technically share space getting ready, but you're sort of in your own zone. Even if you got kids, it's all about them. And so you may kiss and say goodbye, I'll see you later tonight. Depending on how your night goes, you're going to come home. Maybe you got a couple hours with the kids, 4 hours to yourself. But you're spending 8 solid hours technically with your associates, your colleagues. So it's not uncommon to have more in-depth relationships with the people you work with than your spouse. The only difference is you don't necessarily change your spouse, but you do change your job. But it's so intense depending on what kind of work you do. And if you're self-employed, you got to be careful about a whole different equation, which is being around your spouse too much if she's also or he's also self-employed. I know at least one of the listeners works with their partner. And that's just amazing. It's just, it's wow. I mean, I have so much envy for folks that can make that work. I don't know that I would have a problem with that either. I haven't actually had that happen in a huge way. But dealing with the workers, there's sort of a silver lining with the whole worker thing sometimes. Now, yours truly has, again, worked with some of the most amazing human beings in the world, where I was literally the luckiest human to share their space. These are normal people, not anybody famous or anything. And then I've had, you know, working in companies where the culture was so different than the way that I had lived up to that point that you know, but of course have people that I'm very good friends with, but other people that just when they open their mouth, it just sounds like that most annoying noise from Dumb and Dumber, right? But you kind of have to get along, don't you? I've worked with guys that were super duper bipolar and violent. Oof. Sending emails to the entire company, slaying one individual in an email and mentioning like violent ends to the disappointment they have with this person. And then they're immediately let go from the company, but they know where we are. And the executives on one configuration of a startup I was in Campbell, California, they locked all the doors to the entire company except the one that I was in, the office that I was in, right? Which was confusing everybody because they go to the front door and yank on it and they couldn't get through. And so if this guy was going to come to work and kill everybody, he was going to come through our, you know, thing. So I was thinking, dudes, you're the ones who pissed him off and we're the ones that are going to get killed. Thank you. You're so generous, you know. But I've had racist bosses. I've had bosses that were having the worst time in their life ever and they were just angry human beings and they just couldn't distribute the shit enough. And when you're in it and you're young, oh my God, it's so hard to deal with because if you've had a blessed life with good friends and good family overall and you get into those situations, it's daunting. And you're subservient in a way if they decide your paycheck, your increases, whether or not you're getting opportunities, whether you get fired. So I have a little rule that can help out here. But it's sometimes a little scary to follow this rule. One, let's say you're in a situation that's abusive, because this would be stressing you out. It's removing that beautiful relaxation from you. These are the things you're coming to this episode hopefully to listen to, not me just talking about a bunch of wonderful, relaxing things. If you have a job and it ain't going well because of some configuration and you try to modify your interactions such that perhaps you don't have as much interaction with that person. Maybe your company's big enough, you can go through some more double-blinded HR department to say, look, I don't want you to say anything about me complaining about this person, but here's the problem, yada, yada, yada. If you can get me promoted to a different area, move to a different area, get them moved or whatever, or at least just put this in the record of that person. So if there's 10 other people saying this, you can maybe evaluate whether they're an asset to the company or not, right? So if you don't have any of those formal techniques, there's one rule I have for my own life, and this goes from the personal circumstance to the professional. Typically only happens in the professional. If you do your management of your personal life the way I've suggested, is that you should never, ever put up with abuse. Take that into your personal. Definitely take that into yourself, too. You shouldn't be abusing yourself. It's okay to encourage yourself and be critical of your capabilities, but don't be critical in a painful way. Be critical in a constructive way. It's very, very important. While you have a job, look for another one. And if you're in a really tight little town and there's not a lot of other opportunities, well, guess what? You only get one life as this person that you are. Your soul goes on and becomes life again, in my opinion. But there's no reason to spend this one, you know, in a bad situation. If you got skills, you got skills. Someone else is probably willing to pay you to have that skill. And even if you had to take a pay cut, which I had to do from that company that was with the bipolar guy, there was a bunch of people in that company that were just nice people, but nice to the extent that they were sort of unproductive. Let's put it that way. I think I was making $80,000 at that company. It was about 27. And I went, I called my buddy at Electronic Arts. I've been contracting there for 6 years. Tried to get in the door full time a couple times. I mean, in some cases, it almost felt like full time work, but I called him and he went inside the HR database for jobs and he found the job I ended up getting. But the pay was $75,000 a year. And I was like, that sucks. I had a house I was renting, car I was paying for, kid I was paying for. And I was like, okay, but this is like one of my dreams because at the time the company was very healthy and was making good stuff. And it had been my home for 6 years, you know. It wasn't a weekend I didn't spend at those places, but several days of the week I'd go in to do the projects I was working on, from music to design to databases and all this other stuff. Okay. So I took that job. It was a 9-hour interview. Didn't hear anything for 2 weeks. I thought the guy just totally forgot I existed. Couldn't imagine anyone coming in with the skills I came in. So I finally called the dude. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, thanks for calling me back. He says, oh, you know, how much would you take? You know, how much are you making now? And he lowballs me $5,000 underneath. And I said, I'll take it. Because you know why? Being abused was worth that $5,000. But what I did was I got in that company and I busted my balls. Plus 3 people resigned, including my boss. So within 6 months, I had received a $30,000 increase in my pay. And there was another 15 coming about a year later. My bonuses were $25,000 a year. Here, cash, stocks also. Okay. So what was terrifying became a blessing. And this happened several times in my lifetime. When I was working at this database company, at the earlier part of doing my work at EA, my boss had switched and turned into this super racist white woman. And I mean racist. Like, don't think I've ever met anyone who told me to my face the statements that she said ever in my life. I don't know how she got as far as she had gotten in life with this overt racism behind closed doors. I guess she thought I was a Klansman or something. I don't know. It's just nuts, right? So once she revealed to me, this is the trigger, she reveals to me that she's a super racist, and she was accusing, I've talked about this a few times in other episodes, but she accused people in the company of being racist who absolutely were not remotely racist. I said, I cannot work for this woman anymore. I love what I was doing. I literally was the star of the department, programmed the entire call tracking database for everybody out of thin air. Everybody loved it. Everything's great. But I cannot work for this woman. I got to meet God one day, and this ain't going to be the way I roll. But man, here I am, a senior person, completely decorated, senior tech, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And I go and I get a job at a consulting company. And I end up, I don't know if my pay went down or up or whatever. It eventually went way up at this company, but that's a whole nother story of, I think, being abused in a financial way. But you know, like I gave you an analogy in a few episodes back, that we get used to where we live. We get relaxed. We build in. This is my place. This is where I live. Other than the house I live in right now, I would say this is a pretty easy thing, right? I've fallen in love with where I live, but you tend to think you're never going to find another place that's going to be as beautiful and as awesome as the place you've manicured yourself. And the same thing happens with your job. You get these fears that no one else will employ you in a different field. And that's complete hogwash. It's a lie. It's just an unfounded PTSD fear that has no foundation. There are people that will hire you for exactly what you do. And now with so many online jobs and remote jobs where you can work from your house, it's only up to you to discipline yourself when you get up in the morning to keep that job. I mean, it's phenomenal, the options that you have today. Plus, the education online, on YouTube especially, is insane. You can learn any skill on YouTube. You just have to be able to teach yourself that. And some people aren't good at that, and some people are. But don't ever take abuse, man. Because why? It robs you of your relaxation. It gives you stress. We don't want any of that stuff in our life. We got technology in the brain, don't we? We got technology we're sharing on this show. Because I loaded up. I set the ball. And a lot of you in the comments spiked that shit down through the center of the earth, man. It's crazy. I read a bunch of comments today, and my God. The comments are like the transcript of brilliance on this show. I mean, you guys are just phenomenal, guys and gals. But now, what are the benefits of relaxation? Let's end on a totally cool note here. Well, I'll give you some advice from Lewis Allen John, the two-time Civil War vet who was my great-great-grandfather. He lived to be 101. Because he lived to be 101 and because he was a Civil War vet, he literally reported to Grant. He said that when they asked him, you know, how did you live so long? Which was kind of funny. In his era, a lot of people lived to be 100. A lot of people. They weren't toxified. They weren't stressed out. But he said, you know, there's two things that he attributed to his 101-year lifespan. Again, his father lived 104. So in two generations, it was 205 years. Crazy. He said, one, I never touched alcohol. He says, I had one shot of whiskey when I was having a tooth pulled during the Civil War. And he goes, it didn't help the pain. Didn't like it. But two, he said, people try to live too fast. This is a dude who died in 1935, born in 1834. You can look him up. There's pictures of him. So this guy has been dead for a very long time. I didn't even learn about the guy until I was in my late teens when the family was pulling out all of his decorations from the Civil War and all these letters from presidents, man. We got letters from like Teddy Roosevelt and stuff. It was crazy, man. I think about his statement as often as I can remember it, which is probably a couple times a week at least. But here's the caveat to our life, of course, right? We can accomplish a ton more in these lifespans that we have today, predominantly because of technology. So let's not make it a negative. Let's make it a positive. That sweet spot of transition in your life, and the younger you are hearing my voice, man, I'm going to upgrade your life to a level that's just what I wish someone had told me when I was younger. And I kind of inadvertently did this, but I wasn't conscious that I was doing it. And if I was conscious, it would have been even better. And the OG listeners have heard this at least two dozen times. But it's so important to relaxing and conquering your life, because conquering your life is where relaxation just shows up. And it shows up like someone sent a million footballs to your house. You have no place to store them. You know, it's just, you're like, oh my God, I love passive footballs. And now I got too many of them, right? It's when you make that transition where you realize that up to a certain age, life controlled you. Because no one told you that you could control it. And that's where you gain ultimate power in your life to do anything that you can conceive, that especially if you use Tony Robbins technology. And it's really just, I mean, you can go listen to his course. I highly recommend it. I don't know where he's at today, but you can do this without having him, just having heard the principle passed through me to you from him. But as soon as you realize, oh my God, I can actually make a decision about where my life goes every split second of my life, whether that person is considered a friend or a foe. If someone's your friend and you have a long-time relationship with them, but then they kind of stress you out, man. Maybe you relax on contacting them as much. Find something else to do. Now, sort of a two-stage process, depending on where you are in your life when you figure this out. You could absolutely love your life the moment you hear this little epiphany. And then you just supercharge your engines, man. You used to run 91 gasoline, now you got super high octane gasoline. And everything goes a little bit faster, a little bit more amazing. Don't stress yourself out, man. Enjoy it. You know, when you're racing a car really, really fast, this is what I learned when I first came to California and worked for Jim Hall Jr. First few times I run around the track, and then I stop. I probably went around 10 times or whatever during a race. I stop and I can't peel my hands off the steering wheel. And it's something that they know about. And so what happens is the guys who are senior instructors, they come and start swatting your hands, helping you pull your hands off the steering wheel. And they are utterly cramped and painful when this happens. It's the funniest little thing, and they haze you to death when you do it. But guess what? That only happened to me one time. Wow. So what changed? I relaxed. Many of you will know that advice that they teach race car drivers, that if they are in a chaotic situation where they're not going to regain control of their car and they realize they're going to spin out, potentially hit an obstacle, another car, a wall, and they try to teach drivers, all drivers, this just normal, like you and me drivers, right? They say, go limp in the car. Let go of the steering wheel. Let your body go limp. And the main reason why they tell you to do that is they don't want you to break your bones by being all stressed up. And what that does is that contracts all your muscles, and it creates this kinetic wave of energy that if you hit something in the front of your car and you're hanging on to that steering wheel, because you're supposed to drop the steering wheel too. Believe it or not, it sounds counterintuitive, but it saves lives. If something hits the front of that car, that energy is going to go through every solid object. Now, the cars obviously today are designed to collapse with the impact. But if you're still hanging on the steering wheel when that happens, it's going to go right in your arms, break your arms, potentially impact your body, break your legs as you're still trying to hit the brake pedal. If you're not touching anything, your accelerator is also not being touched. But if you go limp, you don't damage yourself as much. And one of the interesting little statistics about car crashes with drunk drivers is that they will get into unbelievable accidents. And how many times have you heard this? Everybody else died but the drunk driver. And the reason why is one group of people didn't know what was happening and the other one did. And he was drunk. And so he was already loosey-goosey in the car, which is probably why he lost control of it in the first place. And he doesn't get as injured. It's a horrible little thing, but it's true. So we can control that without a negative thing and be very relaxed with life as we take control of it. If this is an epiphany that you can actually control your life and you don't like the one that you're in, well, now you can get really excited really fast. Because guess what's going to happen next in your life? You're going to go to work, and there may be a job that you don't like, or in a relationship that you don't like, or in a friendship that you don't like. And you know that there's now an exit strategy. You can, with a relationship, hopefully you at least throw down a big attempt to communicate, because you might be able to salvage everything. You might be able to, depending on the intellect of your friend, do that with your friend as well. But if you can't, don't worry. There's a lot of fish in the sea to be your friend. There's a lot of fish in the sea to be your partner in life. But you will have a regrets, I will say, if you don't try to salvage those. But again, you will know whether or not your friend is the kind of person that can listen to that, or your spouse. Hopefully you always can talk to your spouse. But if it doesn't work out, the goal is to be relaxed. Because relaxation will also improve your health tremendously. Stress causes cancer. Relaxation causes it's sort of the fountain of youth, if you will. You can see stress marks in people's faces. People are in really hardcore jobs. The older you get, this becomes more prevalent as you meet people. You will see age in their face, and they'll say that they're really young. One of my very good friends and mentors in life, one of the funniest stories that I've told recently, is that he, for 10 years, was in a super-duper stressful coding job for the government. And when I met him, he was 29 years old, and I was 19. And I asked him one day how old he was, and he was about to walk out the front door of his house. It's like, I just remember this like it was yesterday, man. And he said, I'm 29. And I promise you, I laughed and gulped my laugh right there in front of his face. And he didn't seem to respond to that, but I was like, really? Like, you're obviously lying to me. I thought this guy was at least in his 40s, like mid-40s. And I met his father later on. And, I don't know, it's like he looked his age. But I have to attribute my friend's aging to the stress that he endured for 10 solid years. In a covert project, couldn't tell anybody what he was doing, still wasn't supposed to tell anybody what he's doing. He eventually told me what he was doing. I've mentioned him in the past. You can connect some dots there. So, you know, there's all kinds of benefits, man. And just realize, too, that the inside of your body doesn't really know what the outside's doing in a conscious sense. So when you stress your body out, you're sending a message to your body that something's really wrong. So when you relax, you send the opposite message. Hey, man, relax. It's cool. Everything's going to be all right. Yeah, we got some problems we got to solve. But guess what? That's what you do. Why? Because everyone who preceded you in life did the exact same thing. And even if you are involved in a situation that can't be halted, someone is divorcing you, they're breaking up with you, someone's fired you, whatever, and you're thinking, well, man, I'm stressed for something I can't control. Well, technically, you're right. That particular situation is out of your control, and it's maybe done already. It's a done deal. You're not going to be able to salvage the situation. But who is in control of your life? Not me. Not anybody else. You're in control of your life. And you may even think that's absurd for you to say that because this other person is making me feel bad and I don't want to feel bad and they're still stressing me out because I cared. I care about them. I love them. Could be your friend, could be a spouse, partner, whatever. Well, I need you to look at the population of the world again. Do the math again. There's more jobs. There's more people. You will find that things correct themselves as much as it seems impossible. I've said it several times on the show, but there's a cliche in life that is so utterly true and is so simple to say. But it is the key to getting through anything. And the older you get, this key fits in the lock way easier, and it's much easier to turn. Like, it's just oil, almost like the lock. You wonder if it even works without the key. It's so easy. And the cliche is that time heals all. We don't like to hear that. But I will tell you this. The way to think about it's like this. Let's take the three examples we've mentioned. You lose your job, or you're losing a friend, or you're losing a partner. Those three things. And of course, just like we bind to inanimate objects, like that car is my favorite car, the house is my favorite house, couldn't live without them. Now, cars usually get us to dislike them after a few years, right? They start breaking down and you're like, get rid of this thing. But here's the cool thing. Have you ever had a job where on your first day, you felt amazing? This is what you always wanted to do. It may not be what you want to do for your total remainder of your life, but right now, that's what you want to do, and that's what you're doing. you ever met a new friend? You're like, man, we really connected. I love talking to this person. They enrich me and I enrich them, and it's just beautiful. You ever fallen in love? Where you're like, oh my God, this person is amazing. And they think I'm amazing. And that's the best thing in the world. That's what God comes in. God is like right there, man. He's like, see what I did? I mean, those little combinations feel good. You're being fulfilled in your career. You're being fulfilled in a friendship. You're being fulfilled in a more partner-bound relationship. Okay. Well, make sure you don't forget what those feelings feel like. What's really ironic about the entire situation is, let's say you started a job and it was euphoric, and it eventually turned into an abusive situation, abusive environment, whatever. You had that best friend and now they're dumping you or whatever. But when you first met, it was amazing. Same with the relationship. Guess what? You can actually use those negative things. And just remember the first phase of those negative things to remind yourself that you're going to experience all that again. You're going to experience the better job that feels euphoric. You're going to move to a location that you just love. You're going to find a new buddy, a bestie. You're going to find a new partner. And all those amazing moments that you've already experienced once in your life, or maybe you haven't experienced them at all. Hey, man, they're going to pop your cherry, man. You're going to feel absolutely more phenomenal than you've ever felt in your entire life. And at the end of every day that happens, you're going to feel relaxed. You're going to feel good. And so just understand, that is why time heals all. Because it is almost like, it's what I keep saying. I keep using this phrase lately, the obligatory moment in time. It's an obligation that event is going to occur in your life. Does it mean you don't love the person that you had a breaking up with? Nah. But guess what? Take it from an expert. You think you can't get over somebody. Man, I've been suicidal about breakups in my younger years, right? I even tried to kill myself once, and when I was 23, go see my suicide episode back in season one. I'll tell you the whole story. But if you had told me at 23, when I'm trying to do something stupid in my apartment, which turned out to be funny right off the bat, it's a funny episode. I have fallen in love a dozen times after that, where it was just euphoric. I mean, literally, you come home and you're sleeping on top of your sheets, floating 6 inches off your sheets, because tomorrow you get to see that person again. I don't know if I have that quite from my friends, but there's definitely, in smoke lounges, you know, I walk in, I still have like half a dozen buddies that I've lived my day, I've worked, I still got some work after I visit the lounge. But when I pop in that lounge with my laptop, I'm just chilling. I got a good stick. My buddies are there. Sometimes the configuration changes. Someone's not there that day, so you get more conversation with one person versus another. I will drive home literally thanking God that these people exist, that I've been blessed to be in their time zone, meaning the era in history where they exist, you know? So there's only solutions in this world, and we make them and we find them. And that's one of the tool-making aspects of being human that we overlook. When they say we're Homo sapiens sapien, the tool makers, right? We only think about screwdrivers and ways to make fire. We don't think about all the intellectual technologies that we have built to deal with life. You are divine by your very existence. And you could be an atheist who doesn't believe in God, and that statement is still true. And that's what I remind my students. I remember when I first gave that example, I was at Chapman University teaching my neurology class, and I said that to some students, and man, I got like three kids in the front. Their eyeballs were huge, and it was like, oh my God, yeah, you're right. You know, I could tell that really hit them hard. And I didn't have any contact with them after the class, but it was like, I felt so, I was blessed with the vision of saying that, whatever brought me that idea. And just watching it in their mind was just the best reward of the, whether or not they got what I was teaching, it was like secondary to that one little thing. So I want you to have that feeling. I want you to have that understanding. Every time you look in the mirror, man, you're looking at a gladiator. You know, whatever the female equivalent of that is, right? That's who you are. and you can't even take it away from yourself. And so if someone doesn't appreciate the gladiator in the mirror, that's their problem, man. You're chill. You're relaxed. And yeah, you might have a phase of transition, which isn't exactly that pleasant. Whatever. The next one's going to be amazing. Okay. Once you find it. And, you know, you might have a dry spell where that isn't in the mix for the next year or two, whatever. Whatever. You're working on the self. You're improving yourself so that when you do bump into another human being, man, you're even better. You're even stronger. And guess what? You might even be more relaxed. And there's nothing more attractive than someone who's relaxed. Not someone who's lazy. That's different, right? That means you're supposed to be doing stuff and you're not doing it. And you could because you got no excuses. That's totally different. But you're confident. Your confidence will follow your relaxation and your accomplishments in life. It's almost like an automatic thing. It's almost like relaxation invents confidence. And that'll make you more attractive to other people, whether it be your buds, your besties, or a spouse of any kind. So, go eat some ice cream. Relax. That's a metaphor. And if you dig these kind of episodes, please go to deepthoughtsradio.com. There's a whole, I think I call it self-improvement category. Because not all the episodes are for you. You probably don't have everything that you don't have any need for all the episodes. But, you know, if you see a title that appeals to you, get in there and get going. And I will say this. I wanted to put this in the sort of comments at the end here. One, all the statistics that were developed for season one got erased when I went and edited all the videos and put them up. So even though videos have really low view counts, and it's partly because I moved them all to a new channel, and not everybody goes to the website to find the episodes. So they simply go to the channel, they search in it, and there's nothing there after 200. It doesn't go back any further. For those of you who like podcasting, the other benefit of the site is that it allows you to get the podcast versions of all those old episodes. Because there's so many episodes, most podcast readers don't go back to the beginning. So you can literally download the MP3 straight to your device and listen to it in your car. Or just play it off the website inside your car. If you download it, then if you lose connection with the internet, you're still good. So all the stuff's up there. I'll just let you go up there and explore. Again, deepthoughtsradio.com. To all the Patreons and PayPals, I always say thank you. Again, if you subscribe, you get things early. And there's a whole slew of videos up there. There's 7 fireside chats up there. Number 7's in color. And so you can get stuff that I'm talking about, thinking about, sort of the metadata behind the show. I discuss format changes or sort of the thinking behind season 7 in general. So get up there if that makes you interested. Only costs $1 to join and you're all good. We have a store too, so get up there and see if there's anything up there that interests you. Anyhow, take care of yourself, relax, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.